up and go ahead and ask some more questions, and then I'll... Yeah, there's another little thing I'd like to mention, being devilish boys down in Nenana. Me and another boy, or two boys, we were over playing there across from Nenana itself. There was an island over there, and then just below the island on the mainland was the railroad had a powder shack. It was probably 10 feet square, all made out of sheet iron deal. And it was just a place where they stored black powder for various things that they needed blasting powder for. Well, we got over there and we could see where one of the corners of the tin was pulled aside a little bit. So we pulled it a little more and we got in there, and here's a whole bunch of 40, 50 pound kegs of black powder. So we proceeded to think we were blasting professionals or something. So we got one of these cans, and unbeknown, the bottom was rusted out. We picked it up and started carrying it out, and we carried it to about a couple hundred feet away from the main powder shack. Well, we got to where we were going to blast this tree out. Why, we dug a hole under the tree and packed the powder in and all this and that, and then let a line of powder way out about 40 feet and struck a match. Well, it went back and it poofed the tree out a little bit. Didn't do much good. But then all of a sudden it started burning over towards the, what you call them, from the trail of powder we left when we took the can to begin.
Oh, so it went back towards the shack.
It went back to the shack. Well, we were far enough away, all right. And all of a sudden that shack just blew sheet iron all over. And we made our way back to town very carefully. And far as I know to this day, they don't know who done it or how it happened or whether...
Spontaneous combustion.
Yeah, well, that's what they could blame it on, I guess.
Well,
but
no,
that scared me. From then on, I didn't do many more pranks.
Mm-hmm. You were through with greasing the tracks. And
yeah, greasing the tracks.
And taking powder.
Yeah.
Well, one thing I wanted to ask you about, you mentioned that the town had, well, I guess the bottom story of the school would have been used for some social events in town? Or
yes, at times they did have little get-togethers down there, and of course it was just all a wood floor. There was no concrete in that building at all. It was mostly log, and then of course finished on the inside with, I don't know what they used in them days, beaver board or something, painted up nice and, mm-hmm. and stuff.
What is beaver board?
It's a compressed type of board made out of a composition of some time, 4x8 sheets, mm-hmm. about a quarter inch thick, and it's they call it a hard board today.
Sort of like plywood, but
yeah,
but
it's just molded together and pressed with a certain amount of glue and mm-hmm. sawdust or something like that.
And for holidays, did you have any town gatherings, Christmas parties?
Boy, you betcha. We'll go back to, 4th of July was the main holiday for kids and people down in Nenana, and of course it's like a lot of communities in Alaska in the early days, Nenana, maybe Fairbanks, but Tananaw and Ruby and Galena and all over the country, Eagle, Alaska, the community put out cans in all the stores, and they'd put kids' benefit fund 4th of July, probably, so I don't know how. Some of them done it, but Nenana they did. And all the old timers would come along and drop a couple quarters or a dollar bill or silver dollars in these cans. They built up quite a fund. Well, they'd use that money for foot races, three-legged race, just running race, slow race, bicycle races, and any other kind. And then a sawdust pile with coins in it that everybody dove into and looking for coins. And then have quite a deal there. Well, prior to all this coming about on the 4th of July, why, along with my family and mother, why, we'd put up about 50 gallons of ice cream, and we had big ice cream mixer, and of course we had access to the ice house. Mm. And the store across, the NC store, was just across the street from us. So we got all our supplies, and we made all our ice cream out of canned milk and stuff like that. And we had a 2.5-gallon mixer. Well, I jacked the truck up the back wheel, and the mixer had a big wheel on it, so I could hold the freezer up against the truck wheel tire and turn the freezer. Because it just got too tiresome for one man to crank it by hand, taking turns. And we'd make vanilla, strawberry, and chocolate, and put it up in big gallon coffee cans, or 2-gallon coffee cans, whatever they were. And she'd freeze it for us, keep it in there.
So you do this a few days ahead of time?
Oh, a couple of weeks ahead of time. And at the same time, we'd bottle up homemade root beer and make popcorn balls and whatever concessions we could think of. And then right out in front of our building in Nenana, why, we'd set up this concession, and Mom would run it for us for nickel for an ice cream cone or whatever they charged. Mm-hmm. I forget, nickel for a bottle or 2 bits or whatever. And, of course, us boys would be out there in competition with the rest of the kids, running races and riding the bicycle and things like this, festivities. And that would be one get-together. For the men would have tug-of-wars for beer, you know, and things like this. There was extra stuff for what you call them to do. But getting back to, well, there was other recreation deals. Like I say, the Pioneer Lodge would put on card parties. And then there was a women's group, I don't know what they called it, the knitting group or hen party of some kind. And they'd put on a card deal where they'd play cards from probably about 7 o'clock until 9 o'clock. And then they'd put the card tables and everything away, and they'd have a meal or sandwiches and all that kind of stuff. Then they'd have a dance, and that'd go until late hours in the
morning. This is all
morning.
Part of the 4th of July?
No.
This is just separate?
Different weekends during the winter. Mostly during the winter they'd have these card parties and stuff. And but in the summertime, other than the 4th of July, I can't remember too much as far as the whole group, the whole town getting together for something.
Did you have a local movie theater?
Yes, we did. And this goes back to Jack Coghill. Prior to him, there was movies there, and I can't recall who run it. But the later years, Jack, as a real young teenager, took over. And he got a hold of the projectors and stuff from whoever had it, and then he ordered film in and run the theater there.
That would be on weekends?
Yeah, mostly just weekends. Mm-hmm.
And where was that held?
Well, for a while, we owned the building that had a theater in it. And, of course, prior to my time there, it was pretty nice. But then it dropped out after the town kind of went quiet because all the construction was over with and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then Jack come along and rejuvenated it. Or somebody else did, and then Jack took over shortly after that. And he run the movie theater for quite some time until my father tore our building down, and then Jack moved into the Pioneer Lodge, which is still standing there, and although the roof is caved in from snow load now, but they're supposed to tear it down here any time now.
That's on the main street?
That's right on the main street, a big black and white building right there.
Mm. Can't recall, is it on the right side as you go towards?
Well, if you were walking towards the depot, it would be on the right side.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think I know about where it is.
Just this side of one of the bars there.
Mm-hmm.
And then, well, let's see, here's, I'm going to stop and think.
Oh, one thing I have to ask you before we leave Nenana. Did you ever ride on the riverboat Nenana?
Yes, that's a story in itself almost. We watched the progress as children there of the building of the steamer Nenana. And it took, I forget how many months it took to build it, but maybe it took about a year to build it from the time they started until they finished. And I believe it was 1934 when it was launched. And I remember as a child, we sat up on the railroad bridge waiting for them to launch it. And of course, it's sitting sideways, and it slid down a marine ways, a greased butter boards like a pallet sitting down there, and the boat sat on that, and the whole thing slid into the river. And I remember it just about caused a tidal wave there when the outer edge hit the river. It sprayed water way up, and a wave as high as this ceiling here,
so that 12,
all the way across the river. And gee, everybody was taking pictures and ooh and ah and all that, you know. And then that was over with. And then a few days later, after they got the steam going and the wheel turning and checking out all the odds and ends on it and stuff, they took the whole town of Nenana, or anybody that wanted to go on an excursion trip. And we left Nenana from the dock with quite a few people on it, and they pointed up river. They turned the boat around and started down river. And about halfway down, some problem arose with some machinery, so they tied up there for a while. So they figured that was a good time to feed everybody, and they had one of the nicest feeds that I can remember as a child. They had fresh fish and vegetables and two or three different types of meat and sausages and just a whole everything, you know, and then pies, cakes, lemonades, and I don't know whether they didn't have Kool-Aid at that time, but there was other types of soft drinks and stuff, and no booze on board. But there was a bunch of kids running around on them decks. It's funny we didn't lose any overboard, but anyway, they got the boat repaired and finished the trip. We were probably on the water about 8 hours, I would guess. I can't really remember, but during the breakdown and then continuing on down to Minnow and then turning around and coming back to Nenana, why, it was probably an 8-hour trip.
Mm-hmm. And that,
I remember getting back about midnight, and I wasn't used to being up that late.
This would have been in June or July, or was it later in the season?
What month it was, I'm not sure, but I would guess it was in fairly early in
the summer.
Yeah, in the summer.
And I guess Captain Adams was the...
Captain Adams was the initial pilot, I believe, and, well, there was...
See, there was Charles Adams, who was the same person who... dropped Barnett off in Fairbanks. I think he was the first captain, and then his nephew was the last captain.
Yeah. And then there was, they had quite a few captains and pilots on the river steamers. Why, they had the Barry Kay and the steamer Alice and the, so many of them boats, I can't remember all of them that plied the waters back and forth.
So that trip that you took on the Nenana was free then?
Yes,
it was just a big excursion trip
for the town of Nenana to show them the appreciation. And
then who did all the food, the various families in town?
No, I think it was all prepared by railroad employees.
Oh.
Because the boat was all ready to put in service, so they had it all stocked with everything, you know, and all the utensils and the bedding, and it was just beautiful, you know. It was a very brand new boat. And then the steamboat got back to Nenana and, of course, went right straight to work pushing barges up and down the river. But this was in the early days now, and at one time they took that one winter, they took, or fall, late fall, they took the steamer Nenana to Whitehorse, and they gave a contract to the White Horse to pull it up on their ways down there where they could work on it, and they put a whole new planked hull on it. And that spring, that winter, and then that spring they launched it and brought it back to Nenana. From my knowledge, I don't believe they ever plied the waters pushing barges or anything. It sat in Nenana for quite some time till the City of Fairbanks, I guess Chamber of Commerce and other people got a hold of it and brought it in for a tourist attraction in Fairbanks. Well, they made a slip on the Chena River down there close to where the city power plant is now. And it was moved into there, and then we blocked the back end, and it floated in water there in a kind of a little pond until the water leaked out and the river dropped. Anyway, it sat there for a number of years until this Alaska Centennial come along, and they thought, well, we'll just put that in a park down where Alaska Land is now. So Walt Wigger and I got the job of moving it from that mooring down to where it was going to be put into the Alaska Land lot, and which is probably, half a mile downriver. So we floated it. We opened the back end and floated it down using a couple tractors to anchor it down and let it down easy because no power or anything, just drifted. And the slip was built down in Alaska Land where it's been moved since, but the first slip is where Walt and I put it. And I always figured I was the last one to steer the wheel on it on the water and moving it down into that Alaska Land spot. So that's about the size of the steamer Nenana.
Yeah, and it's been there ever since.
And it's been there ever since, although the Historical Society, they made a historical monument out of it and got lots of funds to put it in the shape it is today, which is marvelous.
So it looks as good as it did day it was launched.
They moved it a little more back towards the center of Alaska Land. Gem Company had that job, and it's sitting on good concrete foundations and looks wonderful.
Yeah, it's quite an attraction to Alaska Land. So you spent your first 16 years in Nenana and then moved to Fairbanks?
Yes. 1943, we were more or less out of the transfer business in Nenana because of very few people left there, really, and not much of a business, down to probably one or two stores, and nobody needed ice anymore, and of course fuel oil come on the scene, and not much wood, so we just kind of disbanded the Alaska transfer. Well, that summer I went to work for the Civil Aeronautics Authority building airports, and I was working down at Summit on the Alaska Railroad and driving a cat and trucks and stuff, and just 16 years old. Then that fall I left down there, quit in time to go to school in Nenana. Well, I got to Nenana and found out mother and sisters were living in Fairbanks, so I said, well, that's the place for me too. So I says, I'll go up there and go to school. Well, I got into school up here, but I was so far behind everybody else, losing a couple years in Nenana. And going to school here in Fairbanks, I was so far behind that I decided, the family was having hard times, and I couldn't depend on mother to bring out home all the living support, so I'd better go out and go to work. So I went out and got a job hauling wood, back to my old way of making a living, is for a couple old woodcutters around here and various other jobs, and till spring come along, and then I got a chance to go out on some other trucking jobs working for different people and stuff like that.
Who did you work for?
The old woodcutter was a guy by the name of Pete Smith, and he sold wood to all people in town here, just hauled wood and sold it to different customers. And there's another one named Quinto Polini. Don't ask me how to spell that name.
Just guess on
he
it.
Was another woodcutter and wood hauler, and had a wood yard where they brought wood in from the woods and stored it on that yard, and then when somebody wanted a cord of wood, he'd load it up and haul it.
So this would be right in town?
Right here in Fairbanks, yeah. And then later that year, I got a job with the Alaska Road Commission. And they were at that year putting a lift on the Moose Creek Dike which was a dike built out there to protect the city of Fairbanks so that the pile driver slough and everything fed into the Chena River, which would cause flooding in the spring just about every year. Well, they put that dike in to hold that back, which helped quite a bit on the town of Fairbanks. And well, I got a job out there that winter in 43, the winter of 43, helping, driving truck and running equipment out there, and still just 16 years old, but I think we were supposed to be a little older working for the road commission, but they overlooked that.
And, if you could drive a truck, that was good enough
for them.
Yeah,
it was good enough for them. So then I got to done with that job in the springtime, and I guess I probably just laid around for a couple of months and till other things opened up, and then I got a job driving truck from Fairbanks to Whitehorse and back, hauling cement, bags of cement for the government that summer, and then just kind of carried on that way the rest of my life. I didn't get a chance to go back and finish school, but
well, I guess at the time you were working for the Road Commission, of course, a lot of men were in the military, so was there quite a shortage of manpower?
That's right. That's one reason it was a little easier for us kids to go to work. And in fact, them years, 43, 4, 5, 6, and so on, why, that's the first place cool kids headed after they got out of school in the springtime, was over to the Alaska Road Commission, because they're pretty sure of getting a job driving trucks and stuff, because they had a lot of roads to repair, all gravel roads, and frost boils coming out, so they'd have to have all gravel in there and fill them up and stuff. So all the kids got a chance to go to work. And then in the early days like that, they called the Alaska Road Commission a school for the young and a home for the old, you know. So, because that's what they had, all young kids out of school, driving truck, and then all the old-timers, they were doing the blasting and the dump men and some of the more better jobs, why, and a place for the old-timers to live, because they couldn't get into the Army or didn't draft them. And, of course, there was a lot of government work around here. They were building Ladd Field at that time and you know, Eielson Air Force Base, they were building that. In fact, I got to work out there one summer, hauling blacktop, paving the runway out there. And that was for Alaska Freight Lines. I worked for them one winter, hauling gravel from Fox, tailing piles gravel, into Ladd Field during the winter time, and they were using that for a base on a lot of buildings, so it was good heavy gravel and held up the buildings like that. So
you saw quite a bit of early construction
activity, then. Yeah, and then one month or so during them times, why, when I was off work someplace, well, then I got a chance to drive a truck to Valdez and back and haul some barrels of asphalt for different locations along the highway where the government was building runways for emergency runways and stuff during the war.
During the war.
Yeah. Gulcana and Big Delta and Tanacross and places like that where they put in nice runways for war deals and emergency strips and stuff.
And you see, of course, at that time the Lend-Lease planes were coming through Fairbanks.
Yeah, I can remember sitting on the end of the runway at Ladd Field and watching them planes come and go that the Americans brought to Fairbanks, and then the Russians picked up here and flew to Russia. Boy, they'd come racing down the runway and they wouldn't bother pulling back on the sticks. They'd just lift their wheels up and they'd start flying, you know.
The Russians.
Yeah. And it used to be some of them, after they lifted the wheels, the airplane dropped a little bit. Of course, the propellers, the tips of the propellers hit the pavement, so they piled a few of them up, too.
So those planes didn't sit on the ground very long?
No, they went
got up right here
on,
and
yeah,
they were ready to put the next team on.
There's a few of the old ferry pilots. They had women, a lot of women ferrying the planes up.
Mm-hmm.
Celia Hunter was one of them, and some other girls.
Jenny Wood.
woods, I think.
Yeah, a lot of them came up.
Yeah,
as
that's
Lindley's
what they've done to the, get to the country.
Pilots.
They were ferry pilots. Yep.
Of course, I guess with the influx of all the military personnel, there must have been some shortages in town. Do you remember?
As far, oh yes, they had a ration department where they rationed sugar, tires, lots of things like that. Women couldn't even find a silk sock in the whole state or whole territory at that time, you know.
Well, I heard.
I think silk was used for something on an airplane.
Or parachutes.
Yeah, parachutes and stuff like this.
Or I heard the Russians bought a lot of the
so-called
luxury items.
My mother at that time was a clerk in the NC store, and the Russians used to just come in there and buy cigarettes and candy and They'd load every plane that left Fairbanks was loaded up with goodies, you know, that they got here to take back home to their sweethearts back there, you know, socks and candy and cigarettes and whatever else they could get. Another big item was cosmetics for their women, lipsticks and all that kind of stuff. I remember Mom talking about that they'd just buy the whole store out of them fancy things, you know, for the women.
So they would run out of items like that.
Oh,
quite
yes.
Frequently.
Then they'd start rationing and stuff like that. And I remember the good old days when we could buy, well, after I got drafted, I know we bought cigarettes for 50 cents a carton, which was a pretty good deal in them days.
And that would be how many packs? Probably about eight?
20 packs.
Oh, 20.
Or 10 packs to a carton.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And things like that. So, you know, the early days around Fairbanks was good days because you'd never seen many robberies or anything like that around Fairbanks. Even with the GIs around here, they were all pretty good boys and, you know, they never caused much trouble to anybody.
Well, and I guess if there was anybody that caused a problem, they were given a, what is called a blue ticket?
Yeah, well, that was prior to the Army, yeah. If he was a bad actor, then they'd marshal to give him a blue ticket out of town.
The
but the MPs were walked with our own police force in town, walked together so they could both judge the guy's character.
Mm-hmm. So there's quite a bit of cooperation
between
the military.
Yeah, cooperation between
the
two, and that's why nobody got in too much trouble around here, mm-hmm. you know. Once in a while, you might get a GI and a civilian into a little fisticuff or something like that, you know. Yeah.
See, you were traveling on the Alaska Highway, I guess early on, just shortly after it was constructed. You mentioned going to Whitehorse.
Yes, I got a chance to go down there a couple of trips as well.
Yeah, so you would go down to Whitehorse?
Yes, we'd. They were. It was a pretty tough road at that time. I think, summer of 44, I think, was the year I was hauling freight out of there. I was using a truck that belonged to George Nervous. And I remember that trip. It'd take 10 days to make a trip because it was gravel roads and you had a lot of flat tires and I carried about 5 to 6 ton on the back of a ton and a half truck, and you get into them mud holes and stuff and have to get your truck pulled through with a tractor and stuff like that. And then one interesting little thing down there, being not too well educated, I made a trip down there one time and got loaded up, and then we stayed in a barracks down there, and it cost us 2 bits a night for the bed and 2 bits a meal. And so I was leaving Whitehorse coming north, and I stopped in the town of Whitehorse, and I said to myself, I'm going in here to this nice restaurant and have a good breakfast before I leave. So I went in there and ordered my ham and eggs, sat down, I had them, ate them, picked up the check, walked to the cash register and gave her a $20 American bill. And she in turn gave me a $20 Canadian bill back. I says, what's going on here? How come you're doing this? I says, don't I owe you for a meal? Well, I didn't think about Canadian money and being different and the exchange on the dollar. So at that time, it was 10 cents on the dollar, I guess. So, and the meal was, I think, $2 for the ham and egg breakfast or something like that. Anyway, I know I got I gave him a $20 bill American one, and I got a $20 Canadian back and a free
meal, a free
breakfast,
meal.
But it was due to the exchange. Yeah. And started back up the road, and then, of course, you had washouts on the road, and you have to wait a few hours here and a few hours there, and I was lucky I met another driver there. It was driving another truck about the same size as mine, and we got to be buddies, so he'd been on the road a lot longer than I had, so he showed me a lot of the kinks and things to do to get home safely and stuff, so, which was a good deal. And after that, then, I don't know what I'd done. Different jobs all around, working for different companies and stuff, but in the later years, after the war was over and stuff, I got a job with Mitchell Truck and Tractor Service.
Oh, that's Bobby Mitchell?
Bobby Mitchell, yeah. And Clyde Garrity. They were partners in this Mitchell Truck and Tractor Service. And Bobby was something like the Alaska Road Commission. He gave a break to every young kid in town that wanted to work and learn something. And he was like a father to us. And Clyde was a mechanic, and Bob was the mouthpiece. He told us what to do and where to go and when to do it, and then taught us how to skin cat the right way and how to drive truck. And he put us to work, and of course we worked in town quite a bit with dump trucks hauling gravel and then tractors. We dig basements and landscape and putting in sewer systems and moving houses. And at the same time he had all this going on in town, he also had a truck running out of Valdez hauling freight to different stores in town, like the old Market Basket and Lavery's Grocery and other outfits, construction outfits. I remember I was still working for him back in 1949, I think it was, that he got the contract for hauling all the steel for the Northward building. And that went from 49 to 51 or so during the construction. But all the steel came out of Valdez, and we hauled it by truck. And by truck out of Valdez, and then we... Reed and Martin had the contract for building the Northward building, and all that steel, like I say, was many, many trips out of Valdez. I drove, made a trip every 3 days. It'd take about a day down and a day back and then a day overrun on each side to grease and change oil and work on the truck and get some sleep and change clothes and shower and stuff, but every 3 days we were making a trip.
And this was year-round?
No, it was just in the summer, because at that time the Valdez Trail, which we call then, mm-hmm. was closed in the wintertime, what they call Thompson Pass, and then Isabel Pass. They were both closed during mm-hmm. the winter.
What shape was the road in the summer?
It was all gravel road, except that same year a number of contractors were rebuilding it out of Fairbanks here. The first part, down through from here to Harding Lake was a contract, and then so on.
This was to pave it?
Yeah, to pave it, rebuild it, reconstruction, and putting pavement on it. But then they didn't start working out of Valdez to paving it for several years later. It just took it in sections, but... So a lot of our hauling was on gravel roads, so we had a lot of flat tires. I remember having 13 flat tires in one trip. And I had repair equipment right along with me.
So you must have had a lot of rubber patches.
Oh, you betcha. We carried everything with us, a compressor, run off the truck, mm-hmm. air compressor, and then tools to break the tire down and patches and boots and stuff to put back in. And
what about gasoline? Did you carry your own fuel?
Well, yeah, usually the tanks on the trucks were big enough to carry enough to go each way. We'd have to fuel here before we left to go south, and then fuel in Valdez to get back again. And we always carried enough to make that trip.
Did you have any other mechanical problems?
Oh, yes. We had brake fan belts and brake axles and a generator would go out or starter wouldn't work or sometimes the whole engine would blow up and you'd have to... These were days when we were pulling trailers. They weren't hauling right on the back of the truck. We were pulling semis. So if you met your partner or one of your own trucks for the same outfit, he'd pull his dead truck out from underneath the trailer and he'd hook up and finish the trip. And then a lot of times we'd either tow that truck to town and get it fixed or
somebody bring it
use. Yeah, we'd use some of the services down the highway to get in their garage and stuff to fix it right there.
So there were a few places along the highway?
Oh, yeah, there was a number of places to stop there, about every
road
50,
houses,
yeah, old roadhouses. Like there was Tekel Roadhouse, Tonsina Roadhouse, Copper Center Roadhouse, Junction Inn, let's see, Sourdough Roadhouse, then Myers Roadhouse, then Paxson's Roadhouse. Then you could go on up the road to Rapids Roadhouse. Then you'd get to Big Delta. Then from Big Delta, you could go on in to Silver Fox Lodge. There was a couple other little places along the road there just for sandwiches and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then pretty much on into town. But everything was in
a day's...
Well, 50 miles apart, you know.
Yeah, a day's drive by horse and buggy.
Yeah, that's right. A lot of them, but there's lots of roadhouses that were closed down and just old and fallen down. There was Beale's Cache. There was several other roadhouses. I can't quite call them now. McKellum was a roadhouse. And
I guess Rika's Roadhouse was... still in operation then.
Yes, she was.
And it was Rika herself that was running it at that time?
Yeah, at that time. Well, that was the ferry. It used to be across the Tanana River before they had the bridge in. It was just probably a year prior to my, or 2 years prior to my starting to work on the Alaska, or the Richardson Highway as far as driving.
So you went across by bridge by that time?
Yeah, most of my travels. I don't recall ever going across that ferry. Boy, there is some, if you want to get a hold of somebody that really knows the highway, it'd be Gene Rogie.
Yeah, I heard about the ferry controversy.
He's been in the business a lot longer than I have, and you know, he come up here in 1926, 28, somewhere in there, 28. Yeah. Was in the trucking business just about all his life.
Did you ever work with him?
Well, I never did work for him, but I worked with him, you know. I mean, we'd sit and have breakfast or dinners or stuff in all the roadhouses because he had his own business and driving his own trucks. Mm-hmm. And we'd meet at a roadhouse and sit down and have dinner. And,
so I guess all the truckers knew one another.
Yeah, we all knew each other.
And you all helped each other even if you were competitors.
Help each other change tires and whatever. Yeah. And then after the roads were set up where you could run all winter year round then, you know, there was a lot of work to do, you know, keeping your truck going, winterized, and keeping your tire change in good shape so you could put them on and off when you had to use them, you know. Mm-hmm. And some days, when it was 35, 40 below, a lot of times you wouldn't need change because it was cold and crisp. Good traction, yeah. But then if it was snowing and had a fresh snow, 2 or 3, 4 inches, well, then you better put chains on because you know it's warm. Because it's snowing.
Snowing, right.
And you start up one of them hills with 20 ton on, or 25 ton, some of them, why, you better make sure you go to the top, otherwise you spin out and slide right back down the hill.
You'd be
which
just
has
like
done
that.
Me several times.
You'd be like that train in Nenana on the Greased Railroad tracks.
Slid back down in the summertime.
So the year-round trucking operation didn't really start until the early to mid-50s?
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, there was a year, back up a little bit, there was a year of 1948-49 that I got a job with Alaska Freight Lines driving truck out of Seattle, hauling mail, and then a lot of the freight came into Dawson Creek, British Columbia.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the beginning of the highway.
Yeah, the train come up that far, so the military was, or Alaska Freight Line was hauling mostly freight for the military. Fort Richardson, Ladfield, and Eielson, and Big Delta, and stuff like that, which was all foods, frozen stuff, and we hauled dynamite, bombs, and ammunition, and hardware, everything, whatever they wanted to ship, and we hauled to all the air bases and stuff like that. Why, that was in the winter of 48 and 49, and two drivers on a truck we called sleeper truck. We had a sleeper cab on the back of it where you could sleep while the other drive. We drove 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd done that for all one winter. And that was in 48, 49. And then, like I say, I jumped around quite a bit between Mitchell Truck and Tractor, Alaska Freight Lines,